Yeah, you can keep it.
Hi, I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic and an addict and codependent and adult child, and just basically my days are full. Which gives me, you know, an advantage over the average guy who just kind of gets up and goes to work, and he doesn't get to have all these people talking to him all the time that I do. I went home one night. You know, it's amazing how I hear things. Never mind. Anyway, I went home one night. I was very stressed out. I don't know what it was, over something. It was probably a relationship. It was back in that period where I thought that if I could just find her, everything would be all right. I'd be cruising the streets at 4 o'clock in the morning looking for her. I knew exactly what she looked like. She was 5'11", blonde, very beautiful. She'd be standing there in the street by her Rolls Royce. And as I came cruising by, she'd say, "You're the one I've been waiting for." And I'd say, "Yeah." You know? And then we'd go home, and that would be it. It would be fine. And nothing's dying on me. Who the hell wants some babe that's out at 4 in the morning on the streets, you know? But besides that, what I eventually discovered was when I was in that place, I was looking for God. But I needed some sort of physical form, some earthly form that I could see, touch, hold, and then I would be okay. And that would be God would then fill me with whatever I needed that day or that night or whenever. So whenever I'm out there cruising, well, I don't do much of that anymore, actually. I've grown up, which is boring. I still have fun. He asked if everybody could hear him, and somebody in the front row said, "Yeah." God, I love it, you know. The alcoholic, it's always about us, right? Never mind. Let's get serious. I've been sober like 40 years, 41 years, something like that. Got here when I was 12. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I do deserve the credit, too. Screw humility. You know what I mean? You make it this far, baby. You've been through some shit, let me tell you. Everything will be okay, but it doesn't mean that you'll never hurt again. So that's what I heard when they said everything will be okay. What I heard was you'll never hurt again. And then when I started to hurt and things began to, feelings began to come up, I didn't know what feelings were. I grew up in a neighborhood where we laughed when the dog got hit by a car. You know, you had to be a tough guy. If you weren't a tough guy, man, you were dead, you know. And it's like, it's so, I think about how hard it was for me to get in touch with feelings and to express feelings. Now, I may talk about feelings, and talking about feelings might make you uncomfortable. If it does, you could leave now, actually. That's honorable. If you leave now, that's honorable. You know, it's something you don't like, and you're not going to sit around and listen to it. So you just get up and go, you know. But don't just stay and sit and judge me. There's nothing honorable in that, you know, so the feelings are going to disturb you. They disturb me all the time. They even wake me up. They always want to talk. At 3 in the morning, and they have a tendency to be negative. They sort of know what the next 5 years is going to be like, and none of it's good, you know. So wants to talk to me about that, you know, how bad it's going to be. And, oh, God. I went home and had a meeting by myself. I woke up about 3 in that panic, you know, and the rest of my life was going to just be terrible, you know, just this bag of manure. And I just didn't, you know, I couldn't call anybody. I don't call and ask for help. Are you kidding? That's not where I come from, not how I grew up. You don't ask for help. You don't let anybody know you need it. You just don't ask for help. So I couldn't call a sponsor at 3. Giving me your phone number was a waste of time because I always hurt like 3 o'clock in the morning. Seems to be the magic hour for a lot of us. 3 o'clock, up, wide awake. Chances of going back to sleep are slim and none. You know, it's like, and I always tried in the beginning until I finally gave up. Somebody taught me not to bother, just get up. It's 3 o'clock, doesn't matter. Get up if you're not sleepy. Don't lay there and try and put yourself back to sleep. You know, I'd lay there all real tight in the ball and, you know, and pray. And somebody say, well, pray until you reach the end. Say the Lord's Prayer over and over until you get to the end and you remember the word that has gone before. You know, and so I would say the Lord's Prayer. Probably it'd take about an hour to accomplish that. And I couldn't get back to sleep. And so the getting up is a good idea. You guys, can I share that with anyone? You want to just get up. Then if you happen to have more than one voice in your head, and they have a tendency to be combative at times, you might want to do what I do, which is then put all your chairs in the house in a circle. Get out the big book and have a discussion meeting. I mean, you got to have a discussion meeting because something's troubling you, which means that you're in conflict. You know, something's wrong. So then you can, you know, as the leader, you pick someone to read the 12 steps. And you get up and move to that chair and sit in it. Eventually, I'll tell you, this one will tire you out and get you back to sleep. I also guarantee you'll wind up screaming at yourself. And it's the point that when you're screaming at yourself that you get it's pretty funny, you know. It isn't really quite as serious as perhaps you were making it out to be, you know. I can get that nuts over like an envelope from the IRS. I can't open it. Can you? You open that shit? I can't open it. I get nuts. I get nuts because I know what's in it. So you got like when was it Johnny Carson would, you know, read the envelope through his forehead. Yeah, you know, it's like I could do that with my mail, you know. Just stick it up there and know it's a bill and throw it away. Be responsible, you know, be the best example of AA I can be. I have this. You may wonder how I got this. You may not wonder how I got it. I haven't talked in a long time. It's been quite a while, a couple of years. For the most part, I think I talked once or twice. This was supposed to be a small meeting, like, you know, 10, 12 people. Thank you for coming out for my coming out. I mean that. Thank you. It's been hard. I like speaking. I love speaking. Yeah, I wouldn't have told you that prior to AA or my first year. I would not have. You know, you said you're going to be a speaker. You know, I said, well, let's see you. Get up before all those people and talk. And then I found out all you had to do is get up here. In the beginning, when you first started out as a speaker, all you got to do is get up here and lie. You know, I created a great story about my past. None of it was true, but it was funny. It was funny and sad. It had all the right ingredients in it. Made people feel stuff. So, someone just distracted me. It makes me smile, making me think about the heart and God. And anyway, I'm here. You know, it's like, this is from a car wreck. January 3rd, 2001. I'd had my daughter with me, who was 13 then, for about 3 weeks over Christmas and New Year's. Had a ball. We just had the best time. I tell you, it was one of those visitations that everything went right from the moment she arrived. And I was just on seventh heaven. Couldn't have been happier. And I had just dropped her off. I lived in Tarzana. You know, me and Jane. Oh, he can deteriorate quick, can he? Straight in the toilet, from heaven to the toilet. I had just dropped her off in Palm Springs and was headed back home. And this young girl, women, right? Our problems are always with women. What? Nothing wrong with that. You know, it's fun. You know? Living with somebody who wants to kill you, you know. keeps your adrenaline up, you know. And we are, many of us are adrenaline junkies. A lot of us, that's our drug in sobriety, in recovery. Anxiety is our drug of choice. Yeah. And it's a good choice because you don't need anybody. You can be home alone in a chair and create it all by yourself. And it's kind of like, you know, being Star Trek, man. It's just go sit in the chair and away I'd go. I'd leave. Goodbye. See ya. We're going to mull this little problem over. Well, that's when you get the chairs out and put them in a circle. You know. It works. Don't, you know, it works. Anyhow, this young woman had a flat tire in the fast lane. I was in the fast lane, and I was doing about 55. I was so mellow from this visit with my daughter. I love her so much, and we had just had a love fest the time she was with me. I was just cruising along, you know, in fast lane, about 55, smoking a cigar, drinking a little Diet Coke, mellowed out, completely mellow. Just guides were passing me on the right, you know, and giving me that look, you know. I thought, you ought to know that I used to jump in the middle of people's hoods in intersections, you know, when I was first sober, so don't fuck with me. Those were bad days. Anyway, get sidetracked. Anyway, she had a flat tire, so she's in the fast lane, so she turns off her engine and parks, basically, in the fast lane. I come around the curve on 10, out by Colton, San Bernardino, somewhere in that area, because that's where they took me to the hospital. And there's a parked car in front of me, and I'm doing 55. There is what followed was interesting. I was in and out of consciousness for a little while because I had removed the windshield with my head. All my ribs were broken. The sixth and seventh cervical vertebrae were fractured at the tips. I went into a coma for a month. Almost. Well, the ambulance ride was interesting because I was still going in and out, you know. And I always would come to at the wrong time. I came to when they were cutting my side to put the tube in to refill the lung, you know, that had collapsed. And that's the moment I come to, you know. He sticks and I'm awake. It's like timing has always been my, you know. It's always been great. So anyway, we're riding to the hospital, and they're in the front. You know, one's in the front, one's sitting with me in the back, and I come to, and they got three different hospitals. They're trying to figure out which one they're going to take me to, and finally the guy driving says, "Well, we'll take them to Arrowhead Hospital," which by the way isn't as bad as it sounds. But let me tell you, when you're laying in the back, man, it doesn't sound good. You know, I'm laying back there. I'm trying to talk, but I can't because my throat's all crushed. And I can just get out. Oh, it spurs. And I want to get out of the guy, but I can't. And I'm back there screaming, and you can't hear me because it's just a little whisper. But I'm saying, fuck Arrowhead, man. I want to... I want to hear Cedars. I want to hear UCLA. I don't want to hear Arrowhead, you know. I'm hurt here, man. This isn't some bullshit busted fingernail, you know. Then I pass out again, you know. Then come to when they're sticking the knife in me to put the tube in. I'm like, oh, this is God. Then I was gone for weeks. And finally they brought my ex-wife in and my daughter and everybody to say goodbye. They were getting ready to put me in pieces and send me off to be transplanted in different people because my brain waves took a dump and there was too much fluid and a lot of things. And my ex-wife, God bless her, she's very formidable. When she wants to be, she can make you head for the hills, let me tell you. And she convinces them that although we're divorced and she's remarried, that she still has power of attorney over my health decisions. Because we have the daughter. And we both feel it should be the other parent making the health decisions. Because the child is involved, you know, and then she looked at the thing and she said, besides, just that drop in the way brain waves could just mean he's doing some thinking. She tells his neurosurgeon, you know, that he gets the. It gets pretty intense when he thinks, you know. So she wouldn't let him carve me up, and they didn't. And I guess later, a couple of days, I came to. Now, here I am, 38, 9 years sober, laying there. I've come out of a coma. The coma's fascinating. Coma's cool. I'll tell you that, you know, because you miss all that shit when they're putting the bar in between your legs and putting the boots on and neck braces and, you know, when drilling holes in you and stuff. It's like you miss it all. All. You get none of it. You know, you're busy chasing your first ex-wife down the highway with the car in the coma, you know. And the best thing about coma, in a dream you wake up, you know, when you get to be too bad of a person, or at least I do. So, but in a coma you get to run them down, you know, you get to go. The coma doesn't care, you know. It's just, Well, you would think that I would say something spiritual coming out of a coma like that and looking at how busted up I was and that I was alive and that my first words would be, you know, some praise God, glory, hallelujah, you know, something like that. But unfortunately, or fortunately, I'm a television writer. I wrote television for about 25 years, and my opening line was, "That's a shit show. Would you change the channel?" My mind, always there to be supportive and helpful. Always positive, moving me forward down the spiritual highway. Well, about 4 months later, I'm in my third hospital, and I'm sitting in a wheelchair out in the patio. We just finished some physical therapy. We've gone through stuff. My hip had been fractured, and the socket had fractured, and everything was pieces in there, and they had just put it back together, you know, where it came apart, they just put a screw in, or, you know, or hung a clip on, or, you know, hit it with a staple gun, or, you know. It did look like a row of staples inside when I saw the x-ray. Scared me. It hurt much worse. I used a lot more painkiller after I saw what it looked like than I did before. Can somebody turn this morphine up? Please? I think 15 cc's in an hour is good. Well, that's what I used to do on the streets. Forgot where I was. I'll do that a bit. It's for the most part, it's names and numbers that I have trouble with. Oh, I'm sitting in this patio, and it comes back, too. don't you ignore me. I'm the highlight of the... And you're going to ignore me? I don't know who asked me, but I bet they're sorry now. Oh, God. So I'm sitting out there, sir, in this wheelchair. And I've gone through a lot of stuff. Ain't going to walk. Well, going to walk with a walker. First it was going to be a wheelchair for the rest of my life. Then it was going to be a walker for the rest of my life. And it was then, when I was moved to the third hospital, it was the first one to ask me what I wanted. You know, it's amazing. I could spend 2 or 3 hours on hospitals and nurses, and I'm probably going to write a little book, I think, for caregivers. Because they, you know, I mean, we don't pay them enough, and they have a lot of reasons to be angry, but I think caregiver is the wrong term. Somehow. Anyway, I got to the third hospital, and they said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "I want to leave here on a cane." And they looked at me, this team of physical therapists, and they said, "Do what we tell you, when we tell you, for as long as we tell you, and we'll see that you leave on a cane." Wow. Just a simple statement. No big deal, no flags, no drums, trumpets, horns, you know, nothing. Just a simple statement. You do what we tell you to do, and you get a cane. I mean, that's a hell of a prize when you're thinking about a walker. You know, I hated being out in public on a walker. People don't see you. You know, they see you, but they turn away immediately. I have a whole different attitude now about people who are handicapped. I try and make sure that at least I make eye contact with them. If I don't make eye contact, I say hi. Make some contact so that they acknowledge their existence. Because I'll tell you, it hurts. You know, a friend of mine had to come get me and take me to the mall. I had to get my glasses. My glasses were all busted up, and I needed a new pair. So when I was able to go out and they could do my eyes and all that stuff, he came and got me, and we went to this mall. We were out in Pomona, where the hospital was. And they don't see you. And boy, it hurts. It really hurts. I wanted to sit down and cry somewhere. I didn't even care if they saw me. You know, that's my childhood. I'm not there, you know. Being ignored, or if I make a noise, I get hit. It was a pretty simple childhood, too, you know. We had real simple rules, you know. You eat your dinner. If you don't eat it, it's there waiting for you at breakfast. And if you don't eat it for breakfast, it's there waiting for you at lunch. But you don't get anything to eat again until you eat that dinner. You know. I held out sometimes for as long as a week. And that's at 11 and 12 years of age. You think I had a little fuck you attitude? As a child, I didn't quite get this parental love thing. Oh, God. Anyway. Well, I say that because, you know, when they read these things and we make a list of the people that we've harmed and we go talk to them, if you're really fortunate, you'll have a sponsor that then after that will help take you and get to make a list of the people that harmed you. See, I never understood the one side thing. I should feel bad and they can go ahead and feel good. You know, they really hurt me. They deserve to know what happened. And so it's another way. It's just flipping basically it's like flipping the sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth steps over and doing them that way. Because it's like, my sponsor said to me that the ninth step is the step that separates the men from the boys. And if you get to there and you make it through the ninth step, you'll stay sober till you die. And they meant, you know, really work the steps and really do this in the, you know, from the book. And you'll be okay, you know. And forgot what point I was going to make. The book, the steps. My glasses, no. I had moved on beyond that. I may not have informed you that I had, but which I guess is a little unfair, you know. God, people that harmed me, make a list of them. Yeah, the men's step, separate them from the boys. Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Welcome.
Well, somebody's listening. Obviously, I'm not. Now I forgot, damn it. I remember when I was before the wreck, and I used to go give these workshops for psychologists and psychiatrists and people working in the addiction programs. And I was talking to this one doctor one night, and I said, you know, I got to get one of those overheads, one of those things that you slap a piece of paper on it, and it shows it up on the wall behind you. And he said, why the hell do you want one of those? I said, because all you guys use them, you know what I mean? It's like professional, you know, make me look more professional. Then I don't have to tell them that I was thrown out of high school and they're paying me thousands of dollars to be here and talk to them. Which gives me great internal satisfaction. So he said, you can't have an overhead. I said, what? He said, you don't understand. He said, you'll put a piece of paper down that'll have something on it, some topic, and you'll be talking, and then you'll just turn left and go down some other path. And while you're going down this other path, everybody's looking at the thing on the wall. They want you to get back and tell them why the hell you put that up there and what it means, you know. And you won't remember, you know. So you can't have an overhead. I said, oh, okay. So I used to forget sometimes before the wreck, but it has been a problem since the wreck. And I hate admitting that, and I hate being less than perfect at the lectern. You know, it's like after years and years and years of just dancing around up here and, you know, bouncing and having a grand time to just forget what the hell I'm saying, and, you know, it just sucks anyway. It took me a year after the wreck to accept the fact that I had been hurt really bad. Not just hurt, but hurt really bad. My therapist was trying to get me there. Friends were trying to get me there. You couldn't get me to go there. I wouldn't go there. I would not go there. I did not want to feel what it feels like to acknowledge it. I've been hurt really bad. I just didn't want to feel that, you know. And if I don't acknowledge it, then it ain't there. I don't know how you live, but, you know, it's my program. If I fail to acknowledge it, it's gone. It suddenly becomes invisible. And I lost my train of thought again.
Heart?
It's not your heart.
Oh. So anyway, I'm sitting in the wheelchair in the patio. I'll go back and come around. I'll sneak up on it from behind. Well, when you go through a windshield, you got to find a new way to think. You know, it's the brain builds up an excessive amount of fluid to protect itself. And what it does is make you forget where you are in your talk in AA. Oh, God, help me. Anyway, I'm sitting in the wheelchair in this patio in this hospital, the third hospital. And you would think I would have immediately begin to praise God because I'm you know, I mean, I've been there in that chair and I have never been enough when it comes to God. I've just never been enough. I've never been good enough, clean enough, spiritual enough. I've never been enough. I just, whatever I do, if I'm driving down the highway and I make the curve there on Ocean and come out from under the bridge and then suddenly there's the Pacific Ocean and the sand and it's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. And I come around and there it is and I look at it and I smile. It makes me smile. It's pretty. Pretty things make me smile. Make me growl too, but they make me smile. I mean, I got eight fucking people up here trying to give a talk. And it's hard, you know. Everybody wants equal time, you know. They all have a different point of view, which is really exhausting, you know. God, I'm still in the wheelchair, still in the patio, you know. It's terrible. I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, the ocean. So I'd see the ocean and it would make me smile and I'd drive on. And within 100 yards, I'm beating myself up. Now I've had a beautiful spiritual moment. I've seen God's beauty, the ocean, the clouds, the sky, the beach, and it's made me smile. I've had a beautiful spiritual moment, and my head is saying to me, you should have parked and sat on your fender for a while and drank it all in. See, there it is, one more time, I'm not enough. That it makes me smile, it's not enough. I got to do more, and because, you know, and I'm tired of being not enough. This is when I thought this. So I'm sitting in a wheelchair and I think, you know, since the wreck, I have said one prayer for maybe 15 seconds, 20 seconds. And I've meditated once, in this 4-month period of time for peace and spiritual connection. One time, maybe 10 seconds. So total time is 25 seconds put in here, 15 praying and 10 meditating. And that's all I've done for the 4 months in a hospital. You know, you got to know what I was going through. You just, being moved this far was you wanted to die, you know. So it was like praying and meditating, you know, was not on my mind. I had to control the pain. I had to, you know, I have to. I got to be enough. I got to do more, you know. And here I am, and I'm alive, and I'm going to leave on a cane. And I understood at that moment what the word grace means. I thought of the prayer, you know, footsteps, about where there's the two sets of footsteps on the beach. God is showing this guy his life, and then suddenly there's only one set. And the guy's saying to God, well, look at this, you know, in my worst crisis, you abandoned me, you know, and leave me out there alone to struggle. And God said, no, that's when I was carrying you. And I'm sitting and I'm alive. I'm alive. One small prayer, 10 seconds of meditation, and I'm alive. And I was supposed to die. And I'm going to have a cane, and I'm not supposed to walk. And I'm a miracle. And I am truly understand the grace of God. By grace, I'm going to be, you know, this. You can make up your own scorecard and figure out whether or not it was worth it. Like, I want a cigar right now. They got me a stool I could sit on if I wanted to, if I get tired up here, and because the hips started to fall apart after a year. And it took them about 6 months to figure out it was falling apart, and they replaced it not too long ago. You know, just a lot of fun. I've just had so much fun. That's being facetious. It's been a wonderful lesson, but it has been. I can live without having it again. I'm a kid from the streets, man. I don't. The problem I had with Board of Criminal Psychiatry in California was I didn't know fear. I'd never been afraid of anything or anybody. Didn't matter how big they were. They were going to go down somehow. So, you know, I got to beat this. You know. Well, 40 years of sobriety. My God. Let me tell you. So, obviously, I misinterpreted the fact that you weren't going to hurt. You know, that everything's going to be okay means you'll never hurt again. So, I've learned something at this late stage. See? Hear that voice? You're getting old and you're forgetting things, and you shouldn't have agreed to do the talk. And I mean, that's what I'm listening to while I'm talking to you, you know. This sick fuck is just up there going, you know. And all I want to do is get through the talk, you know. And it's like, maybe I could put some of these chairs in a circle up here, and I could... I could have a meeting. You could watch me and get how crazy I really am. You know, I'm a major fan of therapy, a major believer in the power of therapy, and I know some of you are not major fans of therapy. If so, just keep your mouth shut about it. You walk that golden path, the first 164 pages of the big book. That's all anyone needs. I've heard that said a lot. You'd be amazed to know I agree with you. But if you had read the big book, you probably wouldn't be saying the first 164 pages. Because on page 133, that's for anybody that's having more trouble with math than I am, that's under 164, comes before. But this does not mean that we disregard human health measures. God has abundantly supplied this world with fine doctors, psychologists, and practitioners of various kinds. I don't even want to guess what Bill meant by practitioners of various kinds. I mean, you got to remember, him and Dr. Bob used to hit the Ouija board after meetings, you know. Bill was a good friend of Arthur Ford's, a psychic, before Arthur came to the fellowship and got sober, you know. So I have no idea what he means by practitioners of various kinds, but you can bet it would make a lot of people turn white. Do not hesitate to take your health. This is so unclear. I can really understand why these people don't get it. Do not hesitate to take your health problems to such persons. Most of them give freely of themselves, and their fellows may enjoy sound, so that their fellows may enjoy sound minds and bodies. And I lost my place reading. Much of them give freely. Try to remember that though God has wrought miracles among us, we should never belittle a good doctor or psychiatrist. Their services are often indispensable in treating a newcomer and in following his case afterward. That's in the... How could they do that to you guys? Slip in there that's so unclear, you know. Do not hesitate to take your health problems to such persons. Then on the next page, 134, which is still under the 164. A word about sex relations. You know, hey, I love AA relationships, man. It's like two trash trucks colliding. Well, it is. And your role in the relationship is to pick through and find out what trash is yours and what's hers. You know, then you'll be okay. You'll have a good relationship. You get in a lot of trouble when everybody's, you know, working on caring or apologizing for the other person's trash. A word about sex relations. I don't know who wrote this. It wasn't me or anyone I knew well. Drunk or sober. Alcohol is so sexually stimulating to some men that they have overindulged. I'd like to meet this guy. You know? I mean, I know you can kind of turn around all that around with if you, you know, shoot a fast 5 cc's of methamphetamine, but other than that, they have overindulged. Couples are occasionally dismayed to find that when drinking is stopped, the man tends to be impotent. Yeah, right, that's why Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous is filling up at the rate of 1,000 a week. Unless the reason is understood, there may be an emotional upset. Is that great? They're probably sitting around talking about, you know, the crazy wife chasing the guy around the house with a skillet, you know. And they get it down to, you know, may experience an upset. There may be an emotional upset. Yeah, there may be. Some of us had this experience only to enjoy in a few months a finer intimacy than ever. There should be no hesitancy. Oh, again, they're unclear here. There should be no hesitancy in consulting a doctor or psychologist if the condition persists. We do not know of many cases where this difficulty has lasted long. Take it to a psychologist. It's very clear about that. Get help. The hardest thing for me to do. Get help. Let somebody help me. Ask for help. Go somewhere where there's help. Just go get somebody. I did 17 years sober. Changed my life. I would have died. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be standing up here. No way in hell had I not started therapy at 17 years. I was 17 years sober and all I wanted to do was die. You know, I didn't even have the energy to want to kill myself. I just wanted to lay down in a gutter with cool, clean water running through it and die. I don't know why that was my image, but, you know, that's my image. Just lay down in a gutter with clean water running over me and say goodbye. There was one point in the coma where I felt my whole being said, this may be it. This may be it. It may be over. And what's the point I was going to make? Oh, I thought about it for a minute, and I didn't get any bright light or none of that shit. But that's probably when the what do you call it? You know, when that meter they had on my brain dropped, and I thought, it's okay. I've had a good life, man. I've had a good life. 17 years, you know, good life. Made lots of money, behaved like an adolescent, spent it all. You know, I've had a lot of fun, had a good time. Been married a lot, you know. By then, probably 7 times. 6. I had one more to go. I've quit. I give up. You know, it's like somebody trying to get that one class in college and they can't get it. Obviously, somewhere in the 7 marriages, I should have got it, you know. I say that, and then what some of you out there know is I'm just a victim of the era in which I grew up. People did not live together. Under any circumstances did a couple live together. It wasn't done. You either got married or you stopped having sexual relations. That was it. So that's why I married 7 times. Now, when I have facing my business manager and we were sitting down figuring out my bankruptcy, don't you think I wished I'd lived with a few of them? I'm telling you, take up gambling, man. It's cheaper. No. Divorce is very expensive. Forget that. What time is it? Can I get sit down or fall over? Whatever. What time is it? Oh, almost 4. So we started at 3. Okay, a couple of more minutes, I guess, here. A bear. Well, yeah, that's because one time I had as many as 70 bears. I remember my daughter, when she was about 3, we went around the house and we talked to each bear to find out which ones wanted to go live at the battered woman's shelter. So they could be there for the mothers and the children. And I was heartbroken. Some of my favorite bears wanted to go, you know. And you get into this stuff with a kid, you got to go all the way. You know, you can't give it up. So I had to take about 6 of my favorite bears in among the other 15 or so we picked out for the kids at the center. You know, I love teddy bears. Teddy bears make me smile. you know. And anything makes me smile. Like if I'm smiling, I'm in a good place, you know. It's coming, because it's coming from, I don't know how to do a fake smile. You know, I mean, I can't pull it off. It says you're dead. You know, I try a fake smile and it says you got 3 minutes left. And then I'm going to kill you. So, you know, what an incredible adventure this has been. 40 years. What an adventure. I have made major mistakes. I have spent $1 million. Went through it like water. It's amazing how fast you can go through that. Well, you got to throw in the divorces. They got their share. I have my best friend who lives over here in Lake Tahoe now, so I get to be close to him. He called me one night, 3 o'clock in the morning. Of course it was 3 o'clock in the morning. He was awake, so I figured I should be awake. He called me. He says, "Hey, you awake?" I said, "Well, you know, now I am, asshole." He says, "I think we ought to take a trip around the country and visit our furniture." I thought that was a wonderful idea. Shared it with a gal who was a dear friend of mine, and was a dear friend when I was in the hospital. Oh God, she was great. And she said that that's a good idea. What she would do is she would have an open house so the guys could come visit their furniture. Each relationship was a different piece. Well, so you've gotten a good look at me, and you know, I may struggle a little bit mentally here and there, but I'm still sober. You got to see who I am and what it's about, and you got to hear me ramble and babble and forget where I was and all of that. And I'm still here. I'm still sober. So I am enough. I'm enough. I mean, one day here in not too far distant future, the cane will go. Really. It's going to go, man. I am enough. The highest form of spirituality is Popeye's philosophy. I am what I am. That's really it. Accepting myself. And I'm enough. I'm enough. I got the message from some people that I wasn't enough. And it's taken a long time to undo it. But I am enough. Unfortunately, they both died before I could tell them that I was enough. So I'm extremely grateful to a God I don't understand. I'm extremely grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's my family, man. You guys are my family. I mean, you came out here to hear this rambling, babbling, bubbling, you know. See, there's that guy sitting up there, and you just rambling, babbling, you're not fucking enough. What do you mean, you know? You're not even close to being enough. Shut up and sit down, you know. Well, you know, I hope your days can be as full as mine. Keeps you from being bored, and I hate being bored more than anything in the world. So I am enough, and God does love me, and I don't have to be doing anything. I don't have to park my car and sit on the fender for a half hour and look at the ocean. The little smile is enough. I have thanked God with the little smile for the beauty of the ocean and the sky. on the beach. I'm enough. A smile. It's enough. It's enough. I always thought it was this big monumental thing. Because I was taught I was a bad person. And I was taught I wasn't enough. And I was taught I'd never be happy. You know, all this was laid on me by a mother who was, I'm a battered child. We're talking broken nose and ribs and, you know, serious stuff. She could dish it out. The message is, I'm not enough. That's what you get when you're getting beaten up, you know. But I am. Isn't that cool? Isn't that cool? I mean, you've listened to me ramble and babble and do all this, and, you know, I'm okay. I don't have to be perfect. My speech doesn't have to pitch talk. Doesn't have to be in line. I don't have to do it chronologically. You know, if I can even find the lectern, we're good. We're, you know, be in the moment. Okay, I'm here. I got this far. What do you want now? You know. Whatever it is, I'm enough. So I am what I am, and I've tried to show you that. And sobriety is beautiful. AA is beautiful. It's an incredible adventure. Incredible. Enjoy the adventure. And you are who you are, the way you are right now. And you couldn't be any other way this moment based on the experiences you've had up till now. There's no way in God's earth you could be any different this moment than you are based on the experiences you've had up till this point. No way. There isn't any way you could be any different. So you are what you are. I am what I am. That's what it is. So thank you for coming out, for my coming out party. And I wish you as much fun as I have had. And it's all right. You can pull the blinds or not pull the blinds when you go home and have the meeting. But that works. It really works. Trust me. I want to hear from you. I want to know what the topic was and how. What. See, you come in here with all these problems and you worry about telling them to us, you know, that we're going to get upset or you're going to scare us or you're going to, you know, disturb us, you know, that. But your problem, you got to understand your problems don't bother us. I mean, your problems don't bother me anyway, not a bit. What bothers me is your solutions. You know. Your solutions to your problems scare the hell out of me. You know. Well, I used to think the way to end a relationship is she should die. And then you'd feel sorry for me. I'd be a widower. She'd be gone. And I could go on and, you know, look for the next person. Well, I mean, that's me. That's me. And that's how it was. That's how it was. Anyway, I really love you guys. It's a good family I belong to. It's a good family you belong to. It's okay to be a little nuts, you know. I wouldn't hesitate to have a meeting by myself. It's so much fun. You wouldn't believe how much fun it is. You know, if you want to stop this whenever it's giving you its opinions, what I say to mine is, what's your source of information? I was thrown out of the Los Angeles City school system in the 10th grade. The system, not a school, but the entire system. I had problems by the time I was 15. Why am I? It's like, you know, this thing so hasn't read many books and doesn't know much. Well, it's actually read a lot of books and does know a lot. But the fuck's the point I'm trying to make?
Thrown out of the school?
Yeah. point I'm trying to make is, the point I'm trying to make is that my mind comes up with just powerful opinions about things that's willing to die to protect this opinion that it has come up with from air. You know, it has no information. It's got nothing valid. You know, but it has an opinion on nuclear physics. You know, well, that son of a bitch is wrong. It's got something on the show. You know, so so when it's really beating you up with opinions, ask it what its source of information is, and it'll shut up. It's embarrassed when you catch it. You know. And don't listen to it when you wake up. My mind waits for me to wake up. Sits on the headboard. When I open one eye, it says, "Oh, good, you're awake. I want to talk to you." Then it tells me that I didn't get enough sleep. Probably going to lose my job. I haven't handled my money well. I probably have enough for 6 weeks. Then I won't have any place to live. I'll be in the goddamn streets, broke, 6 weeks from now. And that bump on my knee isn't really from hitting the coffee table. It's bone cancer. And you're going to die. That's basically what my mind says to me in the morning, you know. And then people wonder why we aren't morning people. You know? I gotta get up. That's the first thing I get to listen to, you know. I'm dying of cancer. I'm losing my job. And I'm going to be homeless, you know. And on that note, thank you for sharing this moment with me. God bless you.